This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Recently, we published an essay by the actress Molly Ringwald. Ringwald, of course, was the star of a series of movies by John Hughes in the 1980s, 16 Candles, Pretty in Pink, The Breakfast Club. Hughes wrote about teenagers, and especially teenage girls, with an insight and an empathy that really hadn't been seen before. But at the same time, writing when he did, he had some blind spots, too. Particularly when it came to how those girls were treated by the boys around them. In Ringwald's essay, she talked about how those movies look very different to her now that she's a mother of a teenager herself.
My feelings about The Breakfast Club really evolved over the years. I think it really wasn't until the Criterion Collection released it and I did an interview about it. By that point, my daughter was 14 years old, and it was after Me Too movement, I really started to feel uncomfortable with aspects of it. And I feel like it took me many years because of the affection I had for these movies and the fact that they're so great in other ways. It was just sort of an accumulation, I think, that really made me want to examine the movies.
As she's been grappling with those movies in the age of Me Too, Molly Ringwald sat down with another admirer of the late John Hughes, the writer and the director Judd Apatow. Apatow made his name writing about the same kinds of characters that Hughes did, lovable outsiders, goofballs, and the smart young women who have to deal with them.
First of all, I'd like to say that I feel like we're coming full circle here because your daughter, Maude, interviewed me for Rookie, and now I'm interviewing you, so...
I feel like somehow our other children need to get involved in that.
I think so, too. Well, the reason why I really wanted to talk to you is because of this piece that I wrote for The New Yorker about my feelings about the films that I made with John Hughes. And I think you, more than any other filmmaker, is seen as having taken over the mantle in a way of John. I mean, you can kind of make a connection between your films and his.
Well, I think with the influences, you know, sometimes you're not aware how deeply influenced you are unless you sit down like this to really think about it. You know, when I was in high school, that's when all of the first John Hughes movies hit. You know, Ferris Bueller.
Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while. You could miss it.
And 16 Candles.
Chronologically, you're 16 today. Physically, you're still 15.
And Breakfast Club.
I assume that you like the movies when they came out.
Well, I had a very strong reaction to Anthony Michael Hall.
And what was that?
I probably felt like, I think I'm a little bit like that guy. I'm a stringy, funny, abused young man. I was a forgotten young man who thought I deserved better. And there was something about his spunk that I connected with.
This information cannot leave this room, okay? It would devastate my reputation as a dude.
No problem.
I've never bagged a babe. I'm not a stud. I got the rep in sixth grade, and it stuck with me. I'm still on hold. Look, I appreciate you not laughing at me, okay?
Sorry.
I really appreciated the way he wrote about young people and their problems. It was very real in a way I hadn't seen before on television. I mean, this was the time of Eight Is Enough, and it definitely was a precedent for, you know, some of the nerd work on a show like Freaks and Geeks, which I worked on.
Right.
You know, the whole point of Freaks and Geeks to its creator Paul Feig was to tell the story of Lindsay Weir.
Mm-hmm.
She, you know, followed in a tradition of some of the great parts that you played. Smart women in high school who are trying to figure out who they are, aren't sure where they fit in. Being smart makes it more difficult because you see how lame everybody is. And so to me, I feel like that's work we've been doing all along. But we've also enjoyed making movies about, you know, immature men and how they grow up and how they learn certain lessons.
Yeah. You know, I saw the movies completely differently when I made them. And although I still have so much affection for them, it's complicated because there are certain things that I feel very uncomfortable with as a feminist and as a mother. When I made The Breakfast Club, I never really thought, the only thing, as I mentioned in the piece, is there's that one part of the movie where John Bender goes under the table and he looks under my skirt. And although you don't really know, you assume that he grabbed my character or, you know, or did something. And I remember at the time that sort of really bothering me. But other than that, the whole seduction, which John Bender really does sexually harass Claire, or you could see it that way, through the whole thing, never apologizes, but still gets the girl, which, yeah. When I think about it, it kind of bothers me. You know, I don't want to imagine a world where somebody basically mistreats my daughter and that she doesn't expect an apology.
Face it, you're a tease.
I'm not a tease.
Sure you are. Sex is your weapon. You said it yourself. You use it to get respect.
No, I never said that. She twisted my words around.
What do you use it for then?
I don't use it, period.
Oh, are you medically frigid or is it psychological?
I didn't mean it that way. You guys are putting words into my mouth.
Well, if you just answer the question.
Why don't you just answer the question?
Be honest.
No big deal.
Yeah, answer it.
Just answer the question, Claire.
Talk to us.
Come on,
answer the question.
Don't
be a jerk. It's easy. It's only one question.
No! I never did it!
When I've put on movies that I liked as a kid with my children, I had the same experience as you. I remember putting on The Blues Brothers for my daughter when she was 9 or 10 years old, and I didn't realize how filthy it was. I mean, there was some really dirty stuff, and I noticed that in a lot of these films. They're way dirtier. They have way more sexual content. There is a lot more, you know, smarmy treatment of women.
Does it diminish your enjoyment now when you watch movies that wouldn't be made now? If you go back and watch them, are you able to say, oh, well, that was just the way it was back then? Like, for instance, I was trying to watch Breakfast at Tiffany's with my daughter. And when it got to Mickey Rooney's portrayal of an Asian person, I stopped. I mean, I just, like, you know, abandoned it entirely because as much as I love Audrey Hepburn, I just couldn't. I couldn't do it.
There's so many jokes that you wouldn't do from the past. So
yeah.
The question is, how are we supposed to feel about jokes that we wouldn't do now? One of the first comedies I saw that was R-rated was Animal House, National Lampoon's Animal House.
Yeah.
And it is a sea of very troubling jokes.
Yes.
When you watch it in 2018.
Yes.
In a way, you know, it holds up and is very funny, but you definitely blanch a bunch of times, like, wow, I can't believe they did that.
Yeah.
And we all feel weird that we loved it as well. Like, we all laughed our asses off at every Long Duck Dong joke.
Yeah.
What's happening, hot stuff?
Now we go, oh, I feel a little weird about some of that. And I assume that will happen with my work, where
yeah.
people will watch it in the future. I'd go, whoa, how did they, you know, how did they think that was okay to do?
When I wrote the article about my feelings about John Hughes, I had an incredible amount of anxiety because this was somebody that I really loved. And I loved the films that I made in so many ways. So to write anything critical about them at all was just really anxiety-inducing. And also, I feel like so many people have had their sort of memories in some way attached to these movies. And I also think, you know, well, how would he have felt about this? Would this have hurt him? And I know that one of your actresses criticized the movie Knocked Up. Was that hurtful to you? And did you feel like her criticism was valid at all or not?
Well, I think that we certainly were trying to show very strong women. That was my intention. And I was playing with the idea of revealing how angry women get. You know, if some stoner gets you pregnant, you might be pissed off.
Yeah.
Here it goes. I'm pregnant.
Fuck off.
What?
What?
I'm pregnant?
With emotion?
With a baby. You're the father.
I'm the father.
Yes!
And that was the point of the movie, which is that Seth Rogen's character, you know, had to put the bong down and learn to respect this woman who he is now about to have a baby with. Part of what made it funny was how bad the place he was at the beginning. And Catherine was incredible in the movie. You know, her acting couldn't be better, and she was really, really funny, but she was tough as hell with Seth, and it really is what makes the movie work.
Yeah.
I think when she watched it, she wished that she was lighter and more fun like the guys. And, you know, it's certainly, you know, it's fine for everyone to have an opinion. It hurts me because I love her in the movie, and I had a great time with her. But it definitely was intentional to have her be, you know, tough and strong in the movie.
I'm just saying, when you're a guy, and, you know, you have a family and you have responsibility, you lose that male camaraderie, and I get that. I totally understand where he's coming from.
Why do guys always go to that place? You miss male camaraderie. What do I give a shit?
Go hang out with your bearded freak friends. I don't care. You want to hang out with guys that look like the Shoe Bomber? It's all on you, man.
Okay, well, what the fuck am I supposed to say to that?
You should just support me, you know? You should just support everything I say, because at this juncture in my life, I'm allowed to be wrong.
So if you're wrong, I have to...
Characters are supposed to be flawed, and a lot of times they're supposed to learn lessons. So we can't really make movies where everyone is great and respectful the whole time, because then there's no drama and there's nowhere to go. But... you know, times have changed, so you certainly could make the argument that the guys wouldn't start in that place right now. I would hope that now young people are learning how to treat each other much earlier, and there's a very open conversation happening right now, which is very important.
For the record, I think we should say that you've been a champion of the whole Me Too movement, but... there are people that you've worked with who have been accused of behaving inappropriately. How do you handle that when it's people that you know and that you've worked with a great deal?
Well, part of it is that I know people on both sides of it. I know people who have been accused, and I know accusers. And it's really tragic. Mm-hmm. A lot of people feel like there's no way to speak publicly without somehow messing it up. And so there's no way to communicate your point of view about it. And at the same time, accusers feel like they're not being taken seriously. They're not being believed, and nothing is changing. But overall, in the big picture, we are talking about something that nobody has ever talked about before. How badly women are treated, how they are disrespected in ways that men haven't paid any attention to.
Yeah. I consider myself lucky because I was never raped. And, you know, considering, I feel like I came out relatively unscathed, although there were tons of inappropriate instances.
How were you able to protect yourself?
It's really hard to say, because if I say, I was a strong person, it makes it sound like I'm saying that those women weren't strong, you know? So I don't really know. I think it was a combination of things. I think my parents were very protective. And I also generally spoke up. I mean, when there was a film director who, you know, stuck his tongue in my mouth when I was 14 years old, I spoke up and I talked to the makeup artist, and the makeup artist talked to the director's wife, and that never happened again. In fact, the director no longer spoke to me on the set.
Well, I think that things have changed in a way that can't be turned back. You know, it's amazing that a director can kiss a 14-year-old actress and get away with it. But I think we all know that if that happened today, that director would be fired immediately. So we do have that change happening. So let's hope that an enormous percentage of it just doesn't happen, because for the first time, people think, I'm going to get fired as the director if I do that.
Yeah.
And I don't think that fear has ever been there
in
the past.
It would also just be nice if it wasn't just the fear of being fired. If it was just,
it'd be
won't
nice
do
if people
that
were good
because
people.
It's terrible.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I don't know if you could make the world any better in the sense of the amount of good versus evil people.
Yeah.
Every movie is filled with awful people. If you really researched who's in every movie, there's one or two terrible people. And so you would not watch anything if your bar was, I won't watch an awful person in the movie. But what I care about that matters is, how are we treating people right now? How are all people respected on a set? How is the crew treated? This is what we can do that's important. We can change how we do business. We can change who's in power so that the future is much healthier and more respectful than it has been in the past.
Agreed. I want to thank you so much for doing this.
Sure, thank you. It's a pleasure.
That was Judd Apatow talking with Molly Ringwald. You can find Ringwald's essay on John Hughes called What About the Breakfast Club at NewYorker.com.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.